NHR Features.
Today, Nottingham Hospital Radio are visiting the Anthony Nolan Stem Cell Collection Centre here at QMC. This is the first of its kind in the UK, and donors come from all over the country to donate their bone marrow. The centre opened last year, I believe it was July. So the first person I'm going to speak to is Laura Dalling, who is the lead nurse. So, hello Laura, can you tell us a little bit about your role and responsibilities?
Yep, so my name's Laura. I actually joined Anthony Nolan in August of last year, but I joined the Cell Collection Centre January 2025. So I've been a part of not so much the project building, so Anthony Nolan really had like a big part in that project building, but then I was a part of actually then making it come to life, I guess. So obviously where we're sat now, this time last year we used this room as like an office. We didn't have desks, we all used the tables, and this was kind of like our office space. There's not really any beds, no donors in. It really was kind of a bit of a carcass, and I've been really quite lucky to be a part of actually building that. So I've kind of got like two prongs to this. When I qualified as a nurse, I went into critical care, and really loved it. It was a really quite a special place to work. You're looking after the sickest of the sick. A lot of the time they don't even know that you're there, and you know, having an impact on them, which for me was part of what made it really quite special. And post COVID, because everything is kind of like pre and post COVID, isn't it? So after COVID, I was working in critical care during COVID, and actually post COVID, I was like, I need a bit of a break. I need something new. I need a new challenge. And I had no idea what apheresis was. I didn't know about the world of apheresis.
Can you explain that to us?
Absolutely. So apheresis is kind of the science and the machines, the technology that we use, that we remove the blood from the body, and then we use a centrifuge. So we use like a spinning mechanism, and it, as we remove the blood and as it spins, it separates into the main components of the blood. So when you think about blood, you think about traditional red blood cells, but actually we've actually got three layers of our blood. So we've got our plasma, it's the lightest, and it floats to the top, and then again that traditional red stuff that we think about, those red blood cells, they sink to the bottom, and then we've got a layer in the middle, which is known as the buffy layer. And actually when you take the blood out and when you spin the blood, that's where your stem cells sit in other white cells, and then you return the blood to the body. And that's kind of apheresis in a nutshell. So there's loads of different things you can do with apheresis. So for people that have sickle cell, you can actually remove their sickled red blood cells out, and you can do an exchange, so you swap it for donated red blood cells. You can do the same with plasma. For some people that have a new leukemia diagnosis, their white blood cells are really quite high, so actually by putting them on this machine, you can take those white blood cells out. Or again, in our case, we actually collect the stem cells as to form part of that transplant. And like I said, I didn't really know what apheresis was. I was just like I saw a job come out and I said, oh, what's that? I went down to have an insight visit the day after and absolutely fell in love, because for me this was like the perfect balance between critical care, because it's got the machines, it's quite a technical speciality, but also you had the people, and it was nice to move away to people that were awake and could talk to me. And I'm really nosy and I like to know about people, so they're stuck on a machine for a few hours and they can't leave my side. So I end up getting to know sort of the ins and outs of them. And
best of both worlds then for you.
Absolutely, it really was that kind of balance, you know, of both. And I originally started my haematology career over at City. So I moved out of critical care and then looked after patients. So the patients that have had red blood cell exchanges, plasma exchanges, but also looking after patients that had received transplants. And on a kind of second prong, my mum was actually a bone marrow donor. So 30 years ago, she donated her bone marrow to a recipient, to a little boy. And when the opportunity came up, so with my experience of looking after the patients and my mum's experience of being that donor, this donor centre really is, for me, my opportunity to kind of give back to the donors. Because without the donors, we don't have the patients. The patients don't get that chance to live. They don't get that hope. They don't get that second chance. So for me, being able to give everything to our donors is really quite...
It's a very personal story then for you, obviously. And,
yeah.
And on a day-to-day basis, what's your activities then?
So I, as the lead nurse, I provide sort of the oversight and leadership and the running of the cell collection centre. I also bring a level of subject matter expert with my apheresis background. And so the nurses that we've employed, they don't have apheresis background, but they've got incredible amount of experience from different aspects. So, you know, acute care, critical care, haematology. So bringing all that together to form this really high functioning, great team of nurses that specialise in this. So a lot of my role at the minute is education, it's training, it's making sure that all of our guidelines and policies are up to gold standard. Because again, it's not just about the hands-on care and the experience that the donors get, but it's about making sure that it's as safe as possible and that that running and the flow of the unit runs basically. And and our set, the donors that come in, that our cells, we make sure that our cells are safe, the procedures are carried out safely, and then the cells get transported safely as well.
Yeah. Can I just ask a question? So today, the patients or the donors are donating just the stem cells?
Yes.
Right, okay. Because it's obviously such a lot can be done with blood transfusions, like you say, the white cells. So that would be a different procedure, would it, to extract the white blood cells?
Yes. The white blood cells that are taken are usually for, like I said, patients and like high leukemia. So you remove those levels so that you don't have those side effects. But obviously within Nottingham, we've got the donor centre for red blood cells. And they also do platelets and plasma donations as well.
Well, obviously people do go and give blood.
Yes.
But today they're only giving...
It is just stem cells. Yeah. Yes. So our donors... signed up onto the register at some point. So we have a lot of outreach programs out in the community, out at universities, with the Marrow Societies. We've got a good working relationship with Nottingham Marrow Society. So these donors have been identified as matches for a recipient. Yes. So we have a patient somewhere across the world who needs some stem cells. That transplant centre has... communicated with Anthony Nolan as the registry to say, we have a patient, do you have a donor?
Do you have a tissue type?
Yeah, essentially. So it's looking at that HLA type in. So it's a little bit more than your blood group.
Yeah.
It's really looking into that genetic makeup. And obviously today we've got two donors who are a match for two different patients in the world.
Yes.
They've been to us previously to have a medical assessment. So we essentially, you get a bit of an MOT, you get a top-to-toe assessment, you have an appointment with our doctor, we take some blood tests off you, just to make sure that it's safe for you as a donor to donate.
Okay.
And then all of that information gets shared with the transplant centre, and the transplant centre say, yeah, great, can we have that donor? And then Anthony Nolan then and us as a cell collection centre facilitate the collection of those stem cells.
So it would seem to me that you get a call, we have somebody who needs a bone marrow. So you look at the register, but then there must be some time before contacting the potential donor, getting them in and doing all the medical tests.
Yeah, so it does vary the length of time. So it can be, depending on the urgency and the need of the cells, it can be quite quickly.
Yes.
It does also rely on the donor's information being up to date. So sometimes, you know, we might have had people that have signed up 15 years ago at university.
Yeah, and they're not 30 anymore.
Well, it's not that they're not 30, so you can donate up to your 61st birthday, but where we recruit new donors, we want as young as possible so they can be on the register for as long as possible.
Yes.
And I think, I can't remember the stats exactly, but the majority of our collections are stem cell collections.
Yes.
So I don't know if you remember back when Shirley Nolan
went. Yes, I do remember the case.
Yeah,
yes.
Went out to the world to say, my son needs a bone marrow transplant.
But we don't know anybody.
Yeah, exactly. So this is where the registry was born, I guess. But back then in the 70s, it really was bone marrow harvests. So you'd have, you'd go under anaesthesia, you'd go into theatre, they'd put a needle into your hip and then we would take the bone marrow out of your bone. Whereas these days, again, science has advanced forward, and actually, like I said, the majority of our, I think it's like 99% of our collections are actually stem cell collections. And what we do is you get 4 days worth of injection before your collection day, and that's to help mobilise your stem cells out of the bone marrow. And then they're floating and swimming around in your bloodstream, and we put 2 needles in and we take the blood out.
So do they have to go to a hospital to be injected?
No, so it can be done at home.
Oh, nice.
We actually teach our donors to self-administer at home. Not everybody likes that, so we do offer a nurse service, so we can make sure that your local community nurses can come in and give it to you.
Yes.
And we do also, obviously, if you came in with a relative or sister or partner, we obviously there's an option that they can administer it for you as well. And usually if it's a male donor, the wives are pretty quick to volunteer. They're like, oh yeah, I'll do it, I'll give them the injection. That happens quite a lot. But we do try and empower and encourage sort of the donors and for them to do that themselves at home. That happens for 4 days before their collection, and then they come into us. The cells that we collect today, so for both of these donors, they will be infused within the next 72 hours.
And will you know where they're going?
The charity does know. We do have a domestic, so we do have one that is staying today, we have one that's staying within the UK, but then we do also have one that is going overseas.
I was going to ask you, how would you describe the state of the technology at the moment, and how is it changing? Is it something that's very fast moving?
So I don't know if you're aware that there's, within the recent years, we've got CAR T therapy that's come out, and this again, that is a really revolutionary part of medicine. And for certain hematology conditions, they're essentially, what we would do is we would collect a certain type of your white blood cell. So you'd come to us, not so much here at us at the collection centre, but you'd go to an apheresis centre, you'd have some of your white blood cells collected, they would then go off to a manufacturing company, they manufacture those cells, and essentially what it does is they modify it so that it attacks the cancer in your own body and you have those cells back. I'm not an expert on it, but that part of like that revolutionary medicine,
yes, is research, yeah, is absolutely vital.
Yes,
it's staggering to just try and understand what's going on with all of this, because obviously most people are in the dark and they hear stem cell, but they don't really have a hands-on knowledge of all that. So thank you for sharing all of
that's
that.
That's okay.
What would you wish people to know that they might not know at the moment there in the public?
I think a lot of our work as an organisation is about the re-education. So it's about, like I said, sort of when you're thinking about 50 years ago, it was bone marrow harvest. And, you know, there are people that I talk to when I say, you know, I work for Anthony Nolan or we do stem cell collections, they all come back to bone marrow. And it's so different, it's so easy, the risks are so much less than what they were when you do performing bone marrows. There is a very, very small chance that despite the injections, we can't get those cells out and you may have to go for a bone marrow transplant. But like I said, the numbers of that annually are really, really, really quite small. And I think being a part of something that's so giving, I'm a regular blood donor, I'm on the register. I was on the register at 16, just like my mum. And to be a part of giving something to somebody at some point, whether it be for a patient imminently or whether it be for a research client down the line, I think it's quite special to be a part of.
Did you hear back? Like, you know, we got the recipient doing well. Do you get any feedback?
So it's a little bit complicated depending on where the cells go to, because each country have different laws about when they can contact. But our donors and recipient can contact each other anonymously via letters. And then, again, depending on which country and depending on the amount of years has passed, we do get feedback from donors and recipient stories where they do meet. One of our board of trustees, he was a patient himself, He's had two transplants, and he's, like I said, now on our board of trustees, and his donor, they're actually like family.
You
know, yeah, so they have a really good relationship. You know, his kids, he gets to be around for his kids because of this donor.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And that, for me, I think it's just that re-education of, it's not quite so scary as it used to be. And we do our best, you know, so that you have a really good experience, and not just about making sure that, you know, yes, the unit is safe, yes, we are well trained, but also it's about that rapport that we build with those donors and making sure that for the 5 hours that you're with us, that we can make it the best possible.
Yeah, you need to have good human skills to interact. It seems like that Laura was born for this role, really.
I
with your personal story, with your mum as well, and your training, and you're obviously a fundamental source of knowledge for people who are working under you as well. So, great, amazing job that you all do here.
So, yes.
Terrific stuff. Was there anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, your last question really, it kind of like hit the nail on the head for me. It's just about that. It's about the re-education, and you never know when it could be you or a family member or a friend that needs these cells. And the more diverse our register is, the more healthy young people that we've got on that are willing to donate and willing to give really does help, you know, worldwide. This isn't just us in the UK, this really does go all across the world. And got a lovely map in the stem cell lab of where our cells have gone to so far. So it just gives you that reminder of actually where the cells are going and who we are helping. And I always, even on a really tough day, I do come back to those patients that I had a really good relationship with at City, and I kind of felt like their family. You know, I'd see them regularly, but without our donors, I never ever would have had that relationship with those patients. I'd never have met them. They wouldn't have met their kids and their grandkids. And yeah, I think that's really just, that's what we're doing here. You know,
one last question from me. If somebody between the ages of 16 and 30 sees a sign, would you like, what do they do? What's the first thing that they do?
So usually on a lot of our stuff, we've got QR codes, we've got access to the website. To start with, it's really, really easy. What we ask, it takes about 30 seconds. You sign up either on the, like I said, depends on where you see it, but on the website, you get a test kit sent out to you, and essentially that's a swab. You swab the inside of your mouth, you pop it back in the prepaid envelope, and you send it back to us.
And that's you on the register?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Thoughts and on. What we do like to ask as well is that, so that anybody that is already on the register, they know they're on the register. A lot of people are usually forgotten that they're on it. But if your contact details does change, make sure that you can try to... I've moved recently, and I know it's really hard to make sure who knows where I am, but it's just about trying to update those information, because it's great that you're on the register, but if you're a match for somebody and we can't get hold of you.
Yes, exactly.
We can't get hold of you.
Exactly.
Amazing. Thank you so much,
right,
Laura.
Thank you very much for that, Laura. Very informative. Sadly, I'm slightly too old to be on the register, but... Yeah.
But I think what's also really important, though, because we have had people from, patients that have been attending the research facility, and their husbands and wives who have said, oh, you know, I'm a bit too old to register. But there are so many ways that you can get involved with the charity. You know, we've got our amazing volunteer courier service, who they do transport cells all across the world. You know, so our volunteers, they're a big part of what we do. They go and collect cells from Australia, South America, you know, Americas, and bring the cells back to our recipients and our patients here in the UK.
You could be a courier, Mary.
So
you
could be a courier.
You could go and see
on a motorbike, possibly.
Why not? I could see you.
You're definitely young at heart, aren't you? You've definitely got that adrenaline bug.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. So, I am now speaking to Connor, who is donating his bone marrow today. So, tell us a bit about what led to you being here today.
So, I actually got involved through a program with the school that I go to. And they organised, I think it was through the Fire Brigade, like an event at the school where Anthony Noland had like loads of people volunteering and advertising like the great stem cell research and donations you can do to help blood cancer. And I just thought it was really quite a good thing to do and potentially add myself to the register. I didn't really think at the time I would get picked, but
no,
especially this early, because it's only been I only signed up a year ago.
You then got yourself on the register, and that was just a simple DNA test, was it?
Yeah, it's literally just like a saliva thing. You just like
swab.
Yeah. And it's really easy, really simple. The bit that takes long is the paperwork, actually. The whole process is actually, from the medical side, it's actually pretty easy and painless. The whole thing, which is really good.
So, when did you get the call to be a donor?
I got a call January, so quite a few months back, but I was actually really surprised, especially how I only signed up a year ago, and I was really excited as well to be able to donate and help someone with blood cancer potentially.
Did you have much knowledge about stem cells and this area before? Any personal stories?
No, not particularly. Just the stuff we'd done at school, just like the videos and stuff that Anthony Nolan had shown us. To kind of advertise them, but not that much knowledge of the whole procedure and everything.
So, how does it feel now you are actually here and donating?
It feels... I'm excited. I'm also, like, really happy that I'm doing this, like, for whoever's on the other side, and hopefully their health will improve because of this.
And does it affect you physically, or are you aware of the procedure?
So, with the current procedure now, it is a bit like you kind of have to sit down for a long period of time. But otherwise, the rest of the procedures and stuff like that are not too long. The injections you have to take up to 5 days beforehand.
Yes.
Can have a bit of side effects. I had some kind of chest pain and all that, mainly on the kind of third day, but I found it wasn't too bad, especially if you're not doing like large amounts of exercise, which I probably did a bit too much on the Saturday.
So, Connor, how old are you, can we ask?
Yeah, I'm 17.
17.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
What about any advice you'd give to someone else who might find themselves in your position, if they're maybe a bit unsure about going down this route? What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would definitely encourage them to do it, because it's really, like, what you're doing for someone else, and given that you're, like, allowing someone, potentially saving someone's life there, as it feels so rewarding. I would say the process, that it is difficult in terms of time. You have to do, like, it's quite a big time commitment, and you have to go for a medical and the final procedure. And for me, I had to travel quite a bit, just outside of Edinburgh.
Good heavens.
Yeah, it's not too bad, but it's a little... quite a bit of a journey.
How did you get down on the train? Or?
Train, and Anthony Nolan books all that, makes it really easy.
Right.
I mean, what I will also say is that Anthony Nolan team that are on the phone are always really good. You can chat to them the whole time about any of the processes.
Great.
If you're having problems with any of the injections or anything, they'll go through it, or they can organise a nurse to come round to your door, which is really good.
So there's a community feel about this, you say?
Yeah, it's really good. You feel really looked after and welcome, yeah.
And are you interested to know who is going to receive your stem cells?
I am curious, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's anonymity, isn't there, between donor and recipient generally, is that right?
Yeah, we don't know anything about the recipient, and I think... It's definitely better that way, because it's important they get to, you know, have privacy. I think they can come to you and say, thank you, you know, I appreciate what you've done. But they don't have to, so I'll just have to see.
Good.
Well done. And thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you for your time.
Hopefully someone who'll be a recipient.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you.
are speaking to, your name, just first
Sophie.
Name? Sophie. Sophie, who is making a stem cell donation at the Anthony Nolan Cell Collection Centre here at QMC. So, Sophie, tell
Not
us all
away.
About how you got to be here today.
So I had someone come in when I was at sixth form, which is about 6 years ago now. They came in, explained what the charity does, and I just felt it's something that I could really get on board with, and I quite sympathise with the story behind the reasons for the charity, so I thought, why not? I didn't expect to hear anything, and obviously it has taken quite a while to actually hear something, so it's nice that I can give something back.
Yes, it's amazing. So then you straight away went and did a DNA sample for them, did you?
Yeah, yes, straight away.
Okay. Right, okay. And then, tell us what happened one day. You got a phone call, did you?
Yeah, so just after New Year's, I had an email come through to be a potential match for someone. So then I had a lady come out, take a couple of blood samples, and just like overall checks and stuff, like a little MOT, as I called it. And then she sent them off. She said it'd be about 2 months before I heard anything. It was only a couple of weeks before I got told I was an actual match for someone. And then that's when the process started. So I was in touch with my coordinator, who got me my appointment here to have my overall checks again. And like, I had to do like a urine sample, ECG, like just all round checks really. So that was quite nice. Save the wait at the doctor's, so it's a bit easier in that sense. So yeah, it's long-winded, but it's only been since about the start of January. So
what about the injections? Did you manage those yourself?
So I didn't do the first two. My mum did them because I was a bit too scared. It was just the anticipation. I thought I could do it, but I was like, Mum, I think you might have to help me. So that was, thankfully, you
was
were
gentle
there.
With you?
No, I got a bruise straight away. So I've got little bruises all over my stomach now.
Was it intravenous or just in?
Just self-administered injections.
Right, so yeah. You didn't have to find a vein?
No, just straight in my stomach, thankfully. Just to make sure it was different areas each
time.
Still
a needle?
Yeah, and it wasn't too big, it was quite small, thankfully. But I had to do two a day for 4 days, so that's 8 overall. But I got given those injections when I was here for my medical check, so had them in the fridge for a couple of weeks before I actually had to take them. So I just got the sort of standard side effects. So I had quite a bad backache, headache, but I was explained all of that, and I've had a really good communication from the team leading up to the injections. I had a phone call on the day to remind me to actually take my injections and what to expect again. So that was nice to be communicated with. But yeah, it's just been a nice ride altogether.
And where have you come from today?
Only Melton Mowbray, so not too far, thankfully. Only about 45 minutes.
So how are you feeling at the moment?
Yeah, I feel really well. I've had some calcium tablets, but that was to be expected. That's just when it separates your calcium from your blood, and you don't get as much when it comes back into your body. So you have to have like a supplement.
You get the blood back, but yeah. You've taken all the goodness.
Pretty much, yeah. So you just have to have a bit of a pick-me-up, but that's okay.
Yes.
And in the form of a tubal
yeah.
tablet.
So, and the process overall, you're kind of happy with how it's all gone so far?
Absolutely. Like, everyone's been so lovely. I was really nervous when I came here for my medical because you don't really know what to expect. You sort of read up on it. Well, I know what I did anyway, and I've watched like TikTok videos and stuff. But most of the nurses that are here today were the same ones when I had my medical, which was lovely. See familiar faces, and then, yeah, it was better now I'm doing it. I was a bit nervous in the lead up, but aside from that, it's been lovely.
There's no way back now, is there?
I know, so I'm just hoping it's all good for someone and it works.
How long have you been on today so far?
I think we started about 9 o'clock. I had a bit of trouble getting the cannulas in, but that's all on me, so I had a couple of attempts with that. About just over an hour and a half, maybe.
Okay, so a bit to go.
Just a bit.
You'll be having a nice rest.
Oh, definitely. A cup of teas and
biscuits. Yeah, I was
going to
say, you're looking forward to a cuppa or something.
Nice chocolate bars and stuff, at least.
So, do you work?
I do work, yeah. I only work as a bartender. It's just a job for now, because I was at uni, but I'm thankful I've got some time off for this process, and my boss has been very, very understanding with the whole process, so, yeah.
Good.
Brilliant. Doing a great job, Sophie.
You are. Yes.
And still smiling.
I know.
There and
yeah.
Thankfully.
We have now arrived, Rajiv and I, in the lab at the Anthony Nolan Centre. So, you are Esme. So, Esme, we would like to know what happens in the lab.
So we get samples from the ward, and we first test the peripheral blood. We do a full blood count, and we also check to see that the donor's mobilised, so that they've got stem cells already there in their blood.
I mean, that sounds terribly complicated. I mean, do you put it all on screen and the data's there?
Yes, we have two different machines we use, so a full blood count analyser, which does the full blood count, and then we have the flow cytometer, which does our CD34.
And do you have parameters that you have to fit within to know whether the sample's okay?
Yeah, so the full blood count, it tells us, yeah, if anything's out of range. So the ward, they're interested in the hematocrit levels so that they can start the machine, and also the platelet levels to make sure the donor's healthy and they're going to be okay to do the procedure. And then we're interested in the CD34 count, and we want that to ideally be over 30, and that tells us that they've been mobilised. And then during the rest of the procedure, we'll test the sample at the middle point so we can see how the donation's going.
So in the middle mm-hmm. of the procedure, with the donor, yeah. you test it, do you?
Yeah, we can get a little bulb sample from the donor, and so we can just see how well the donation's going, because we always have a target for what the patient needs, and so we can then know how long the donor needs to be on the machine for, whether it's going to need to go to a two-day collection, something like that. And also it's nicer for the donor that we might not need to have them on the machine for as long as well.
Good, I see.
And then we test the bag at the end to make sure we have got the number of stem cells that we need, and we test to see that there's T cells as well in there, check that they're nice and alive and happy, and then we also do a sterility test as well.
You must have a very technical background. How did you end up here?
So I did biomedical science at university, and then I've worked in various like research lab jobs. And then, yeah.
How many in the team, in the lab team?
So it's a very small team. There's sort of about three scientists and a lab manager, and we can sort of rotate around the different roles.
So you know, before we reach this point, am I right in thinking the stem cells mm-hmm. were just in a certain place, but the procedure these days gets them moving round so you can get them out of the blood?
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah.
How it's... Yeah,
so the stem cells live in your bone marrow.
Right, okay.
So before it used to be...
them to circulate.
Yeah. So before it used to be quite a like lengthy procedure of the donor would actually have to go to surgery and have the bone marrow tapped out their bone,
I think is quite painful.
Which can be painful in like a longer recovery time.
Yes.
Whereas now, with giving themselves injections for a couple of days, it causes them to be released
to start swimming.
Yeah, and then so it's just like having a sort of a blood donation, and that it gets taken out and then comes back in what we don't want to get back.
So when the donation's finished, what happens then?
So when the donation's finished, we also check their full blood count again, just to make sure the donor's all good and healthy, and then they can go home. We will process the bag and make sure that what's in there has got the right number of stem cells that we need, and do a sterility test to make sure that it's nice and clean for the recipient. And then we have a variety of couriers that come and will pick up the cells from us and then take them wherever they're needed to go. So if it's going to someone in the UK, the Anthony Nolan couriers will come and pick them up, and they're like all volunteer couriers, so they're normally like retired, and they come and pick them up, and they'll take them anywhere in the UK. And then we also send the transplants worldwide, and so we get international couriers coming, and we'll hand themselves.
And do they actually have to physically go themselves to the country?
Yeah. So once we hand the bag of cells to them, they cannot leave their body. So even if they need to go to the loo.
Oh, right.
If they have to stay in the hotel overnight, it'll be in their bedroom with them. So it's all within...
What do they store them in? Also?
Yeah, so they look like kind of very posh lunch boxes that you'd take for a picnic, but they've got special cool packs in them to make sure it stays at the right temperature. But yeah,
and
once we handle...
how long do they live for?
They've got 72 hours to transplant them into.
So timing's key on
it. Yeah, so everything's all timed to perfection, because the recipient also has to go through quite a lengthy conditioning programme, which will be like very intense chemo and stuff, so it's all timed to precision.
So the recipient then has to clear their body of their own stem cells?
Yeah,
they?
Ready for them.
I see, and then they get the injection. I'm with it.
You're getting to be a bit of an expert here.
Yeah.
You're working here soon, aren't you?
Yeah, do you want to run the samples this afternoon?
I wouldn't put it past it.
Very interesting, Roger.
Fabulous, thank you very much for that, Esme. And how long have you been working here?
About a year and a half, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But then this has been up and running for about fully 3 years.
So are you happy here? Do you like
I really enjoy it. Yeah, it's interesting and like, well, just knowing that you're giving someone a second chance of life is quite rewarding.
But I mean, it's good. You obviously don't have a nursing part, saying that.
No.
You don't have a nursing background. You have a scientific background.
Yeah. So it's nice how close we are with the ward as well, because then it means that we have.
It seems to be really well connected, like sort of, you know, it's very much a team, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone's working. There's to be a synergy between all of you.
Yeah. Yeah. We all get on really well, and it's just it's a nice dynamic.
Thank you. Great job.
Very much.
It's an amazing place to discover.
So now I am speaking to Catherine, correct?
That's
you
right.
You are the CRF team, so tell us what that is.
So I'm the Director of Clinical Operations for Research here at Nottingham Hospitals, and I oversee this whole department and the wider R&I team. So this is our adult clinical research facility, and our role here is to deliver sort of early phase or quite complex research, so looking at new treatments and therapies for patients in Nottinghamshire. We do see patients all over the country as well. But one of the things that we did about 2-3 years ago when we first got this unit, because we've only been here a few years, is we were trying to think of different partnerships that we could actually look at and how we could bring different services and opportunities to our patients. And one of the teams that approached us was Anthony Nolan. And so we started to talk about how we could work together and develop research protocols and different ways of working with people with blood cancer and those sort of things. And then we had a light bulb moment between us and thought, what about if we had a cell collection centre here within the research facility, which means that we've got a much better opportunity, as I'm sure you've heard from other colleagues, of making sure we get as many donors through the system as possible, which means we can treat more patients, but also the opportunity to research the way that we do that. So how we improve the way we do it using different types of machinery, different processes, but also there's opportunity for the machinery that we use in Anthony Nolan to be used in other areas, so not just blood cancer. So, for example, we've currently got a trial called Emerald. All trials have weird and wonderful names.
Yeah.
And this is looking at people with severe liver disease who are not suitable perhaps for a transplant, or, you know, transplants are not easy because we don't have many livers floating around waiting for us. And the idea is that can we take cells from that patient in the same way that we do with our donors for Anthony Nolan, and then add a therapy to it and then give them back, and will that help regenerate the liver, so therefore not needing a transplant? So we wouldn't be able to do that type of research if we didn't work with Anthony Nolan, but they have the expertise and the equipment that we need. So that's really exciting opportunity, and we're only one of three centres in the UK able to do that because of the equipment that we've got here. And I think it's a real partnership made in heaven, so that we can offer more to our patients and do different types of trials. But equally, it's a really central place for donors to come to. Nottingham is right in the middle. It's got easy transport links, you know, and it makes it really easy for our donors to come. And it's a nice environment. It's not a busy clinical environment. It's a quite calm clinical environment, which is how it should be for donors. So I think it works really well for us.
It sounds extremely comprehensive, doesn't it? You know, apart from the, you know, the blood cancers and stuff like that, it goes for liver disease and various other conditions that can benefit from.
Was that discovered by chance, or how did that emerge then? Like, this equipment can be used for that potentially as well.
So it's the actual process of apheresis, so taking cells from somebody and then adding therapy to it and then putting it back. So in the way that Anthony Nolan works for blood cancer is you're taking healthy cells and putting it into somebody who needs those healthy cells.
Sure.
Whereas with this, we're adding treatments to those cells, and then putting them back into patients. So there's a lot of therapies like that. So they're called advanced therapies, and we do something called CAR-T therapy in hematology patients, and that's a new treatment, and it's quite similar in that way. I'm not an expert in this area at all.
I think Laura mentioned,
well, Laura mentioned this to do with white blood cells.
That's right, yeah. So we know that that works for people with cancer. So you start to look, I think at any time in medicine, you always look at something that might work somewhere else and can we use it in another way that's quite similar. And lots of drugs have been developed that way. And usually it's because of side effects that you find. So a really good example of this is Viagra. So Viagra was not intended for the use that it's now used. Right. It was a diabetes medication. And
well, that's a bit like the slimming drug.
It is, exactly thing. That, yeah. Exactly that. And, you know, whilst...
Talk about
the
side effects.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's always a funny one in a sense. But, you know, it's actually changed the lives of a lot of people, that drug. And it's really important. But that was found because of the side effects. And actually, it wasn't a very good diabetes drug, but it obviously worked in other ways. Yeah. So that's what we do in research, and I think the more that you do that, the more that you can see opportunities to use different things. So I'm a heart nurse by background, and some of the research that I've done is that we've used chemotherapy drugs that we've then coated on what's called a cardiac stent, and they're sort of painted on, and then when they put in the heart arteries, they stop it from reblocking. So you can use different drugs in different ways, and that's the beauty of research, really. And this is such an exciting opportunity. But it also gives Anthony Nolan the ability to develop their research side of things and work with us. And, you know, lots of places want to use cells to do research on. So, you know, pharmaceutical companies or the university, they also want healthy cells to work on and see, so they can test things. So that makes it really interesting as well. So there's so much opportunity in the partnership, I think.
It's been fascinating to see all the connections between the various... different teams and how it all threads together. It's very beautifully connected, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. I think what I take from the morning experience is how important research is. You know, when you think of the National Health, people say, oh, you know, we've got beds in corridors and we need more money for this, that, the other. But nobody actually stresses the huge importance, I don't feel, of medical research. I mean, without it...
Where
would we be?
Exactly, we would be very different, wouldn't we? And I think, you know, as somebody who's been working in research for 26 years, you know, that's the thing that drives me. You know, to be involved in tomorrow's treatments is the most exciting job.
Yeah.
And still, you know, I get goosebumps when we talk about it. And, you know, we talk about that trial with the liver disease. That's life-changing for somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely life-changing. And we can't do that unless we do the research. So we have lots of research in NUH. So we have over 500 trials running at any one time. And some of them are about how people feel and what their experiences are. And some of them are really high tech type trials like we've talked about. So, you know, you've got to have it all really to make patients' experience and health better. That's how we'll do that. Yeah. We'll improve health by researching more.
And of course you have volunteers who will come and be, you know,
in clinical trials.
Yeah,
absolutely we do. And, you know, we're incredibly lucky. And we are lucky in one way. As I said, you know, this is a very calm environment for people to come to. But we look after our patients really well. And we make sure that they're cared for while they're on trials. And we work with their clinical team so that they don't miss out on their everyday treatment. But a lot of people do volunteer and, you know, very early phase studies where we haven't tested them on humans before, people still volunteer for that, which is incredibly, you know, kind and selfless, actually, because they might not get anything out of it. But there is a lot of evidence out there that tells us that people who take part in clinical trials in the area that they're perhaps suffering from, they will get better care out of it because they get seen more regularly and they're getting cutting-edge treatment. So, you know, there's lots of benefits, but it isn't always the case. So we really do rely on people volunteering.
Yes.
Yeah. And we try and make it as easy as possible for people. So, you know, travel expenses and things like that and appointments that suit them. Always got a cup of tea where possible.
I mean, it's just lovely to hear something positive about the health service and QMC, really. You know, we get the bad press
all the time, isn't there?
Yeah, well, so, people are always interested in the bad things, aren't they? Yes. Not necessarily the good things. I mean, there's many, many good things that go on in these hospitals.
And anyway, we at NHR are going to change all that, aren't we?
Well, I'm glad to hear it. But yeah, we're very happy to talk to you any time, honestly,
thank
about
you.
Any research that we're doing.
We really appreciate the access and, speaking to some of the
they're a great team, and it is lovely to get the donor's perspective, and they're so young as and they're just so selfless.
I know.
So selfless, and it's amazing to do.
It's just wonderful.
Yeah. Sophie's mum, every time we tell her that she's saving somebody's life, she starts to cry. She's so proud of her.
It's just wonderful.
It's emotional, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Because that is genuinely the case with these guys. These two are saving somebody's life. At the end of this week, somebody will be receiving those cells, and that will change their lives for the better.
You see, unless you're in that position, you just don't realise, do you?
No, not at all. Yeah. We're giving somebody another chance.
Talk about literally making a difference,
Absolutely, we do. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that we do. I mean, when you think about COVID and research in COVID, we wouldn't have got out of COVID without research.
And the vaccine, I agree.
And also the treatments, initially knowing how to treat COVID when somebody got it, let alone trying to prevent people getting it in the first place. But, all of that is still, really, really important research. And we're still doing research into COVID because we have to make sure that that never happens again.
Yeah. I know. It's like the current outbreak of meningitis. I mean, everybody's saying, you didn't move quickly enough. But they have to identify the virus, don't they, before they can really...
They do, and you don't expect an outbreak. And also, we encourage students to have vaccinations, and not everybody does because you don't see it, and we understand that. And particularly, younger people might not see that evidence that somebody might die of meningitis, but unfortunately that has happened, and it happens often. And that's why we have the vaccinations, because we don't want it to happen. But it is encouraging people to do that. Vaccinations are a really important part of public health. We all have an obligation, in my opinion, to be vaccinated so that we try and prevent that spread.
I think post-COVID, there's a lot of the information about vaccinations and misinformation, which is something that's maybe been a bit damaging.
There's a lot of myths around it. And I understand people's concerns. It feels like COVID vaccinations were developed really, really quickly, but they'd actually been in development for many, many years. And because they'd been in development for so long, we were able to mobilise them a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. And everything takes money. And so to develop vaccines costs a lot of money to do that. But when somebody is able to give you that funding to develop it, you can do it really quickly, because then you can mobilise more staff, you get people on the ground, people were working 24/7, and that's not normal. We wouldn't normally work in that fashion in research, but we had to, because we had to get out of that situation. Mm-hmm. And, the UK were leaders in that, which is brilliant.
Yes.
Well, it's a fantastic setup.
It
all
is.
This place,
and, I'm really, really impressed and very happy to be able to visit today.
Well, thank you very much.
Time.
Appreciate now, yours as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
That's okay.
We have thoroughly enjoyed our visit.
Yeah, thank you so much
really
for
great.
Coming along, and thank you for persevering with me.
Yeah.
NHR Features.